Hey everybody, welcome back to DMX Gaming. Today I really just want to dive in and share with you all of my thoughts and opinions, things that I've been going through emotionally, analytically, just really trying to understand and grasp what we witnessed with the Fallout TV show on Amazon Prime. And I immediately just wanted to grab my camera and start recording my raw reaction when the show was finished. But I thought it would be best to maybe take some time to kind of ponder the messages and the themes that the television show was giving to us. Fallout is the most important gaming franchise to me. Fallout New Vegas was the first game that really opened my eyes to proper world building, proper storytelling. And Obsidian's Fallout New Vegas really meant something special to me when I was growing up. Sure, I had fun playing a lot of other games, and other games meant something to me as well, but there was just something very special about the experience I had being in the Wasteland during the Fallout games, and really understanding these stories on a deeper level and having a more deeper connection and meaning to them. I think that it is a relief, and I speak for the majority of Fallout fans out there, that Fallout on Amazon Prime does not disappoint when it comes to portraying this mysterious yet deadly wasteland, which is the world of Fallout. Is the show perfect? No. But I would dare say it is very close. It's pretty close to becoming a perfect show. And I rightly came into this show, as most people did, with a lot of skepticism. But I left feeling excited and hopeful for the future of the Fallout franchise, which is something that a lot of Fallout fans have wanted for so long. The Fallout franchise has needed a W like this for a really long time. After the disappointment of Fallout 76, we have really needed media that just pushed the Fallout in a new direction and opened up more meaningful storytelling that will help us understand the world of Fallout on a more deeper level. And I think this show really does do that. But what I really want right now is to focus on the characters that this show gives us, their motivations, the factions that the show includes and their motivations, and how this story has become the catalyst for what I think is the future direction of the Fallout franchise. I will also be pointing out parts of the show that I feel like were unneeded and out of place and kind of angered me as a Fallout fan. But I will also be pointing out things that I feel like were perfect and deserved to be in this show. First, I want to talk about the characters. There are three main characters in the Fallout television show. We have Lucy McLean, who is the Vault Dweller. We have Maximus, who is the soon-to-be Brotherhood of Steel Squire. And we have Cooper Howard, who is a pre-war movie star who is turned into a merciless bounty hunter ghoul. Let's start with Lucy. Lucy has one of the most powerful character arcs in the whole story. She was raised in Vault 33 her entire life. She wanted nothing more than to do her duty. When we first meet Lucy in the showrunners take a very fun approach to her character, as they essentially tell us what her special stats are. You see, in the Fallout video games, you get to create your own character by pouring points into different stats like strength, perception, intelligence, endurance, and so on. And I absolutely love that when we see Lucy in her opening interview, she explains what her stats are. She has a knack for repair and science. She has skills in speech as she explains her passion and desire for teaching etiquette and American history. She also has skills with her strength as she explains her love for wrestling and fencing in the vault. My absolute favorite character trait with Lucy, though, is her gun skill and how the showrunners depict Lucy's gun skill. You see, on the show, Lucy claims not to be very good with guns, but we see her hitting her target perfectly. This allows us as the audience to infer that although Lucy is highly skilled at shooting, she doesn't like it. She would rather be out learning, reading, and teaching than handling weapons. And as the show progresses, we see that when Vault 33 is raided, Lucy's choice of weapon is a variant of the syringe rifle, kind of like a syringe pistol. And she fires darts at the raiders that do not kill them, but rather put them to sleep. She does the same in the Wasteland when she was confronted by the ghoul. Later on in the series, Lucy doesn't want to raise her weapon to the fiends on the bridge because she wanted to believe and give them the benefit of the doubt that they were good. There are two memorable moments in the series where Lucy fires her iconic 10mm pistol. The first occurs at the Super Duper March, when Lucy is attacked by a feral ghoul who is in the middle of losing her mind. Even then, Lucy did not want to fire the weapon, but did so to protect her own life. The second is when Lucy ends the life of her mother, who is now a feral ghoul, near the end of the season. Lucy is also known for using very ethically friendly language, like okie dokie and gosh darn it. Not only is this a callback to her upbringing in a friendly vault, but to her internal desire to do good and bring hope to the world. Lucy's initial motivation for the show is to rescue her father after he is taken away from Vault 33 from Moldiver. When Lucy enters the Wasteland, she has a unique conversation with an escaped scientist from the Enclave, where he tells her she has two options. She can return to the vault and continue her sheltered life, or like the irradiated creatures of the Wasteland, she can adapt and mold into someone that can handle the brutality of the unforgiving Wasteland. This is Lucy's character arc of the show. It is also mentioned that when she marries her suspect raider husband in Vault 33, her father gives a speech where he states he has hope for the Wasteland because of his daughter Lucy. So as Lucy takes this journey, will she be able to hold to the good karma and keep the values that make her a pillar of hope for the Vault Dwellers? Or will she be forced to adapt? Will she be forced to make unethical decisions in the name of survival? We see one such moment play out in Vault 4, where Lucy breaks into the lower levels of the vault and ends up splashing acid in the face of an innocent scientist because she felt threatened. We also see Lucy desecrate the body of the escaped Enclave doctor by cutting off his head so that she can use the head as a bargaining chip for her father when she makes it to Moldiver. We do see moments where Lucy embraces her good side by convincing Maximus to return the fusion core to Vault 4, giving the ghoul the chems he needs in order to survive and keep his mind, and convincing her father to give Moldiver the activation code to the cold fusion. By the end of the show, we see a battle-worn Lucy who has embraced the good of herself as well as the darkness of the Wasteland that was brought out in her to create a character that is not only suited by the survival of this world, but suited to make real change. The second character I want to discuss is Maximus. Maximus is the second character of the show, and his character revolves around duty and belonging. Maximus isn't afraid to make morally gray and or evil decisions if he believes it's what's for the best. Maximus has a very tragic backstory. His home, friends, family, and basically everyone he ever loved or cared about was killed and taken from him at a very young age. When a nuclear blast destroyed Shady Sands, the capital of the New California Republic, very little was left standing, but a boy managed to hide and crawl out of safety when the dust settled. This boy was Maximus. He would then be rescued by a Brotherhood of Steel Knight wearing iconic power armor. This would push Maximus to do whatever it took to become a knight himself and don the power armor. Being raised by the Brotherhood was not an easy feat for Maximus, as he was ruthlessly tortured by his fellow recruits. He was also forced to have one of the worst jobs in the entire Brotherhood, cleaning the latrines each night. Maximus would eventually get his wish, and he would be able to squire for a Brotherhood of Knight named Titus. After Titus would cower in fear from a Yaogwai assault, Maximus would watch him die, as it was in his best interest. It would also give Maximus the chance to don the armor that he had longed for his whole life. Maximus would use this armor to prove to himself that he was no longer the victim, but he was now the aggressor. Maximus has always wanted to belong. He's always wanted to have a place that accepts him. There's a point in the show where Maximus is pretending to be Knight Titus, and he is having a great time with his new squire and former bully. For just a moment, he feels safe enough to reveal his face, only to be immediately met with betrayal. This would lead to Maximus losing his armor and the only thing that had given him power in a long time. He would later find belonging with Lucy as the two would develop feelings for one another and plan a future together. Maximus gets to the point where he is so fed up with the Brotherhood of Steel that he is willing to leave it all behind in order to be with Lucy in Vault 33. But first, he has to help her with her mission in finding Moldiver and rescuing her father. This would lead to Maximus and the Brotherhood launching a full-on assault on the new headquarters of the New California Republic. Maximus would be knocked out and Lucy would leave him behind to go after her father with the ghoul. Maximus's last scene will foreshadow a very character-defining moment for him. When Maximus awakes, he sees Moldiver enter the room and activate the cold fusion plant. It ends up working and we see buildings light up in the surrounding area. Moldiver has been mortally wounded and she turns to Maximus and she says, "What do you suppose your Brotherhood would do with infinite power? Maybe you can stop them. Maybe you can't. Maybe all you can do is try." These were her final words. As she took her last breath, we can see Maximus really ponder her words, because deep down he knows. He knows what the Brotherhood is capable of. Sure, they may have done good things in the past, but the Brotherhood will not share this technology with anyone. They will use it to advance their own goals and aspirations. Shortly after Moldiver's death, the rest of the Brotherhood filters into the room and cheers on Maximus as the knight that destroyed their enemy's leader. So, Maximus, if he chooses, has found a high up position in the Brotherhood and fulfilled his need of belonging and value. But what about Lucy? Can he just move on from her? Only time will tell. The third main character of the Fallout television show is who I believe to be the most interesting character on the show, Cooper Howard, otherwise known as the Ghoul. Cooper was a Hollywood star. He was living the big time, making lots of money, had the perfect nuclear family, and relied heavily on the values of America. We learn that Cooper slowly began to lose faith in the American system of capitalism and corporate greed, but not because he wanted to, because he had to. You see, Cooper loves America. He was a Marine in the Battle of Anchorage, Alaska, where he donned the mighty power armor, the crowning jewel of American warfare. However, he noticed a fatal flaw and weakness in this armor that cost the lives of many people close to him. When Cooper returned home, he started his acting career and began living the nuclear family lifestyle. He was on board with the brand deals and the corporate overhaul of the economy. After all, these companies like Vault-Tec, they were the real heroes. They were the ones that wanted to save America if the dreaded day of apocalypse were to come. Cooper's wife works pretty high up at Vault-Tec, and she uses Cooper's power and influence as a star to help her promote the company. He even started the company's most successful marketing campaign, the Vault Boy, with his iconic thumbs up to help sell spots in these underground vaults that were to be the salvation of mankind. Cooper began to notice that many of his close friends and actors were being blacklisted from Hollywood due to the rapid rise of communist ideology. This was bad because the Great War was currently happening with China, and the Chinese were evil communists that didn't stand for democracy and freedom. Cooper slowly but surely begins to realize that Vault-Tec is up to something nefarious. He begins to understand that the company is way too powerful, has the complete backing of the government, and has an interest in the bombs actually dropping so that the company can please their shareholders. It isn't explained yet, but Moldiver was also alive before the bombs dropped. And she puts the idea in Cooper's head that his wife isn't who he thinks she is. After tossing around this idea, Cooper decides to spy on his wife. He places a little transmitter on her Pip-Boy and listens in to a meeting where he hears the horrible truth. Vault Tech plans on dropping the bombs. The majority of the vaults will conduct immoral experiments at the behest of massive corporate overlords. And his wife had been behind it the whole time. We don't know how much later from this moment it is, but Cooper is now a divorced dad. He's forced to work children's birthday parties in order to pay alimony to his ex-wife. He is with his daughter the day the bombs drop. And when they drop, Cooper can't help but look out and realize that the nightmare he has dreaded for so long is finally here. It is likely that Cooper's backstory is important to grasp because it shows the biggest flaw that his character has to overcome, and that is trust. You see, Cooper now, the ghoul, doesn't work for anybody. He works for himself. The lives of others don't matter. The world doesn't matter. Bottle caps don't matter. Food doesn't matter. Drink doesn't matter. None of it matters unless it will help Cooper in the long run. When we see Cooper in the wasteland, we see evil. Cooper kills because he can, and he does it without mercy, and he does it without remorse. This is a man who has lost everything dear to him and has nothing left to live for but himself. We see him destroy many people in the town of Philly. We see him nearly drown Lucy to death as he uses her as bait. We see him push Lucy to the brink of dehydration across the wasteland. We see him kill a dear friend of his that seemed pretty close with him in order to extend his sanity for a little bit longer. We see him sell Lucy to an insane group where they will try and harvest her organs, all so he can obtain the chems he needs to keep his sanity. We also see him murder a boy who was not an adult, but a child. The child had information that would lead him to Moldiver, and when he received the information, he taunted the boy into grabbing a gun, which gave him an excuse to tie up another loose end. When it comes to Cooper, we can tell he hates every faction in the wasteland. He hates Vault Tech for what they have done to the world. He hates the NCR and Brotherhood for trying to save it. And he even hates Dogmeat. And Dogmeat hasn't hurt anyone. Well, except for that one Enclave scientist who tried raising the alarm. It isn't until the end of the show where Cooper realizes he has a chance to find his family again, that he begins to open up. He invites Lucy to journey with him to track Hank and learn exactly what's going on. There are so many other great characters in the show, like Norm, Lucy's brother, who starts off the show as a coward and then finds the bravery to explore Vault 32 and 31, or the mysterious Moldiver and how she plays a strange role of a worshipped individual that appears to be the only thing holding the NCR together, or even the mysterious survivor of Shady Sands in Vault 4 who claims to be the daughter of a woman courier. There are characters I didn't like, however. For example, most of the vault dwellers in Vault 4, Thaddeus, the squire that joins Maximus, and some of the leadership at Vault 33. But for the most part, these characters are fine within the show and don't bother me that much. Now let's get into the biggest issues with Fallout on Prime. Now, a lot of the issues are either lore related or just need more context in order for me to fully grasp the concept the showrunners were portraying. Let's talk about the elephant in the room, the New California Republic. To give you a little bit of context, Fallout, the television show, takes place 15 years after Fallout New Vegas, which is the last official canon storyline we have related to the West Coast. The world of Fallout New Vegas showed us one thing. The New California Republic was one of, if not the most powerful faction in the wasteland. They had the most amount of land, weapons, wealth, and influence in the wasteland. In the show, the only thing left of Shady Sands is a massive crater in the ground. We are also told that Hank, Lucy's father, destroyed Shady Sands for two reasons. One, because Lucy's mother found a place outside of the vault that was filled with hope and growing a sustainable community. And two, because the mission of Vault Tech in Vault 31, 32, and 33 is to wait out the survivors on the surface and then return to the surface to reclaim it the way Vault-Tec intended it to be reclaimed. We get the impression from the show that the NCR is a small faction of what it used to be. Instead of a powerhouse with thousands of citizens, they are now a ragtag gang with maybe 100 survivors. I have a problem with this. I have a problem with this because according to the games, it is established that the NCR has lots of territory, which means even though Shady Sands may have fallen, the NCR is still the ruling government for towns like Junktown, the LA Boneyard, and so much more. Not to mention any and all territories they may have expanded for as they made their way east towards Vegas. All this being said, I know it's been 15 years, and I know a lot can happen in 15 years, but it's just really hard for me to believe that the NCR is gone, and I don't want to believe it either. The NCR is my favorite faction. They have a lot of faults, no one is denying that, but they were one of the few groups in the Wasteland that prioritized voting and democracy. I really hope that in season 2 of this show, we will see more of the NCR territories and realize that the NCR is beat, but still breathing. All of this regarding the NCR can be forgiven, but there is one thing that cannot, and that is the issue of dates on a chalkboard. When Lucy is wandering around Vault 4, she finds herself in a classroom where she sees a chalkboard with dates. The dates on this chalkboard all make sense except for one. The dates go as follows. 2142, Shady Sands founded. This is correct, and it matches up with events that occurred in Fallout 1. 2189. The New California Republic created. Again, this is correct, and it matches up with events in Fallout 2. 2198. Shady Sands becomes the capital of the NCR. Again, no issue here. This matches up with events and lore from Fallout 2. 2241. NCR becomes the largest economic and political power in California. Again, matching events from Fallout 2. And Fallout New Vegas, where we learn of the NCR's vast expansion efforts. But it is this last date that has severely divided Fallout fans, and particularly fans of Fallout New Vegas. 2277, the fall of Shady Sands. If Shady Sands fell in 2277, that directly contradicts what we are led to believe in the entirety of Fallout New Vegas. The events of Fallout New Vegas don't take place until 2281. This means that throughout the entirety of Fallout New Vegas, Shady Sands has been nothing but a crater in the ground. This is very hard to believe, considering the many references to the NCR capital of Shady Sands in the game. For example, citizens of the NCR must take a test in Freeside in order to access the NCR food and aid. One of the test questions involves knowing what the capital of the NCR is. The question is, what is the original name of the NCR capital? The answer being Shady Sands. Now, we could nitpick the wording a little bit and maybe infer that the name of the capital is no longer Shady Sands because Shady Sands doesn't exist. But it's safe to assume that the writers did not have that in mind when they made the game. Also, because of the destruction of Shady Sands, we are given the vibe that the NCR is basically no more. They are but a remnant of what they once were. This again would make no sense given the context of New Vegas, where the NCR had a huge presence in the Mojave. Not only did they occupy Hoover Dam with hundreds of troops, but they also had an embassy on the New Vegas Strip. How could a beaten and dying faction with no capital have such a strong foothold in the Mojave? The answer, they couldn't. We can infer a few things from this date on the chalkboard in Vault 4. One, the events that occurred in Fallout New Vegas are not canon in the television show. Two, Shady Sands was destroyed, but it has been kept secret from the settlers of Vegas. Or three, the date on the chalkboard is wrong. I do not have the answer, and everything at this point is speculation and guessing. But this is something that the showrunners must address in future episodes of the show. They cannot ignore this. This is a big deal. I see a lot of people online saying that this is not a big deal, that it's just a date on the chalkboard, but this date matters. This is one of the most important dates that matter because it could potentially contradict everything we know about the New California Republic and the events that occurred in Fallout New Vegas. Another issue of the show revolves around Moldiver's character. We find out that she is basically the leader of the NCR, or at least what's left of the Shady Sands portion of the NCR. However, we have always been shown that the NCR takes certain rules and regulations very seriously, two of which are chem use and murder. When these raiders attack Vault 33, we see one of them take a hit of Jet, which is a highly addictive drug that is 100% banned by the NCR. These raiders are also carelessly murdering what at the time were unarmed civilians that did not initiate combat. I have a few theories. One, the NCR is so broken and angry that they do not have the means or desire to enforce their old way of life, and they know Vault 33 played a big role in their destruction, so they retaliated with as much anger and force as they could in order to get revenge for the loss of Shady Sands. My second theory is that Moldiver hired a mercenary group of fiends to help her do this job so that she didn't put NCR citizens at risk. Let's hope it's the latter, because if it's the former, then that means that the NCR is truly gone, because when a faction changes its ways and ideals, is it truly the same faction? I would love to get clarity on Moldiver's character in season 2. I thought the show handled the Brotherhood of Steel very well, actually. They have stuck to their ideals of hoarding technology and preventing the unworthy from obtaining it. My major gripe with the Brotherhood of Steel in the show is just how powerful the West Coast chapter is. They have training camps, airships, vertibirds, all the best weapons, and the strongest armor. Was there a scenario where they struck the NCR while they were down and took all of their resources out from under them? Possibly, but what I think is more likely is a unification with the East Coast Brotherhood. We know from Fallout 4 that Elder Maxon conversed heavily with the West Coast Brotherhood. After events in Fallout 4, I think the Brotherhood made their way to the West Coast to support their brothers and bolster their lines. That's why we see the Brotherhood in the show having a lot more numbers, success, and resources than the Mojave chapter did in Fallout New Vegas. Again, I really hope we get to see more about the rise of the West Coast Brotherhood and the powerhouse that they have become in Season 2, especially with the ending of Season 1, where they now have complete control over Cold Fusion, which is an unlimited resource of power. Let's now talk about ghouls. Probably one of the biggest lore changes that the show has made that has deviated from the games is the way the showrunners decided to portray ghouls. From what we see in the show, becoming a ghoul gives your body fast-acting healing and regenerative powers. Maximus crushes the foot of his former bully, who then ends up trading a fusion core to a chem dealer for some treatment that would help fix his mangled foot. This chem dealer somehow has a chemical that can turn humans into ghouls, and we see his foot get immediately healed. Now, the chem turning him into a ghoul is believable. We received a similar story from Hancock in Fallout 4. My issue is that is of the instantaneous healing. You see, in the game, this doesn't happen. Ghouls can't be mortally wounded. We see it happen all the time. There is another part of the show where Maximus's former bully gets impaled in the neck. Not only does he not die, but he pulls this debris out of his neck and is instantly healed. We see the ghoul Cooper get shot multiple times throughout the season, and he walks it off like nothing has happened. We do know, however, that ghouls can die, and I think the key to destroying ghouls is to kill the brain, similar to how zombies work. We see feral ghouls attack Lucy and she kills one. We see Cooper kill his friend, who is also a ghoul, and I can't help but wonder if Bethesda is going to take this approach for ghouls and add this new power in future titles like Fallout 5. Another issue I have with the show is Vault 4. I feel like this segment of the show was a very boring side mission that slowed down the pacing of the show a lot. There were some really powerful moments where Lucy is in the classroom and she reads the history of Shady Sands on the board and sees the NCR flag, and we hear the iconic Fallout music play in the background. I seriously got chills in that moment. As broken as the NCR is, you can still feel the weight and meaning that that flag has to the people in the vault, and I think it was executed very well. The weird cult of Shady Sand survivors rubbing ashes on their bodies and worshiping Moldiver was a bit much though, and I do feel like it was very out of place, especially for former citizens of the NCR. This segues perfectly into my next issue, which is the worship figure herself, Moldiver. Who is she? Well, she was alive before the bombs dropped. She was alive during the time of Shady Sands, and she was alive during its destruction. However, she's not a ghoul, which means just like from Vault 31 and the sole survivor, she must have found a way to cryogenically freeze herself and survive the bombs dropping. Did she play some vital role in the NCR? And why is she so heavily worshipped by the survivors? It doesn't really make sense, and her character left me with more questions than answers that can hopefully be resolved in a season 2. The most important piece of lore that we received from the Fallout television show was basically the confirmation that Vault-Tec most likely dropped the bombs. Cooper listened in on the meeting where his wife openly talked about ushering in the apocalypse so that Vault-Tec could have the money needed to pay back its investors. Who else was sitting in this meeting? The man himself, Robert House. We know from Fallout New Vegas that Robert House was able to prepare Las Vegas for the bombing by creating a defensive grid that would shoot the nukes before they hit the city. He didn't get them all, but he got most of them. His preparation, it appears, wasn't dumb luck, but rather carefully thought out, as the apocalypse was pre-planned by massive corporations in America. It has been theorized for a while in the Fallout community that Vault-Tec dropped the bombs. The biggest piece of evidence we had for the longest time was the dud nuke in Megaton, which had the Vault-Tec logo attached to it. The scary part about Vault-Tec and the nukes is that they still have access to them, as Overseer Hank demonstrated by destroying Shady Sands. Hopefully, in an upcoming season of the show, we will gain a more deeper understanding of Vault-Tec's access to these nuclear weapons and how they use them to usher in the apocalypse. The last scene in the season involves Hank making his way through the Mojave Wasteland to the city of New Vegas. As much as I, as a fan, was screaming, crying, and throwing up when I saw this, the biggest question that I have been mulling around in my head is why. If the NCR controlled New Vegas, why would Hank go there? He would have no friends there. Maybe he would attempt to take control of the power grid and somehow use it to extort more control for Vault-Tec. If the Legion had won the second battle of Hoover Dam, then Hank would have been in the same boat. He would have no friends there. It just doesn't make sense for him to go there. This means that I believe the canonical ending of Fallout New Vegas is either the Mr. House ending or the Yes Man / Independent New Vegas ending. Hank probably would have been close to Robert House before the war. He probably would have known Robert House's plans for Vegas. And now he is headed there to work out some kind of deal with him or get him to help Vault-Tec. I think this is unlikely because Robert House was not the biggest fan of Vault-Tec. Not only did he not like them in Fallout New Vegas, but he seemed to heavily disagree with them in the meeting during the show. So now let's shift our focus to Yes Man, that creepy, happy little robot that helps the courier secure independence for New Vegas. If you remember at the end of Yes Man's ending, Yes Man decides to go offline for a while so he can finish doing some updates. These updates that Yes Man had, did they have anything to do with Vault-Tec? Did they somehow hack the network and take over Vegas? It would make sense. It's not like Yes Man would tell them no. In fact, he would probably tell them how to do it. That's why Hank would be heading there. It's some sort of safe harbor for him where he can lick his wounds and potentially turn more destruction towards California. I know I talked about a lot of negativity and issues that I had with the Fallout TV show. I want all of you to know that I loved the show. I thought this show was the best piece of Fallout content that we as fans have gotten in a long time. We have needed a win for the Fallout series for the longest time. And I can gladly say that this show gives us that win. But I would be remiss if I didn't point out any concerns or issues that I saw with the lore in this show. I think the showrunners really nailed the tone of this show. Everything from the costume design to the weapons to the sound effects, they were all perfect. And I had no complaints with any of it. Not only did they nail the tone, but I think the actors that they chose to portray these characters did such a good job. This show was not cheap. It was not low budget. It was high quality. And that's what I really appreciated about it. Being a Fallout fan my entire life, watching this show was a very special and meaningful experience to me. And I'm glad that I have the opportunity to share these experiences and these thoughts with you. But at the end of the day, these are just my experiences and these are my opinions, and I'd love to hear yours. So please leave them in the comments below, and I'll see you in the next video.